because of that inner divinity, we have the choice and the power to rise up out of depression, addiction, victimhood, or any other suffering. I know because I've done it, and I've watched countless others do it as well. And so I hope you join me here every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on 88.3 FM or online at WAIF883.org, as we explore the many ways there are to tap into the power and the beauty and the divine love that lives in your heart. It's yours as soon as you claim it. There is never really anything that we need to get or gain in order to experience wholeness or joy or prosperity. There's only stuff that we have to let go of, the stuff that has blocked our awareness of already having all of that right inside of us. That divine power is ours to use for all things good, and it arises most easily and fully from humility and gratitude. And so I want to thank you so much for listening, and to also let you know that there is a Facebook page for this show by the same name, Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within, and I'd love to hear from you on that Facebook page. We also begin each week with a little bit of music to uplift our spirits, to bring body and mind into a greater harmony, and to let the body move if it really wants to. Because when the body's moving with music, it begins to feel more strongly that divine spirit that is actually animating the body. So we'll be back in a few minutes, and I hope you join us for today's exploration of how to live a happier, healthier, more spiritually connected life. And here's some music to get us moving on that divine journey.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. Me.
course, was Nina Simone singing Feeling Good. You are listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM on your dial, and also live streaming online at WAIF883.org. My name is Reverend Louisa Dyer. I'm your host here every Tuesday. I'm sorry, that's every Wednesday. From 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, usually, but today we are on from 1 to 3 because we have a special guest that I'll be introducing in just a few moments. I am a metaphysical minister and a spiritual life coach, and our show is called Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. And it's a show where we focus on every week discovering the tools and also uncovering or calling forth the inspiration to actually live happier and healthier lives. And we live in amazing times because there are so many ways that we can tap into that source of life itself, that divinity. It lives inside each and every one of us. I call it God. You can call it Great Spirit, Universal Flow. It doesn't matter, I don't think, what you call it. What matters is that you know that that spark, that divine essence of life itself, is inside of you, and that when you call on it, when you bring it into your awareness, you have a way then to tap into the power and the beauty and the love, because that's where it comes from. And it's inside each and every one of us. And when we can actually begin to welcome that connection with that divine spark inside of us, we wake up in ways that we never even imagined that we could. And so today, the reason we're doing a two-hour show is that we have an interview with Kim Ballou, and she is a woman I just heard recently doing music, and I was so amazed because she uses the power of words with music combined with her own life experiences, and this incredible passion comes through her music for raising consciousness, is how I thought of it, for positive change. And she calls it rap. I call it hip-hop. I've never liked that kind of music. But when I heard her, it was like, oh, my gosh, this is my kind of music. So we are going to hear a little bit about her story, because her story, the little that I know, also reminded me of my story, which, of course, then, of course, I'd want to have her on the radio. So we have a beautiful young woman in the studio today. Her name is Kim Ballou, and I'm going to let her introduce herself to you. How are you doing, Kim?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here, and I'm looking forward to going on this journey with you and sharing about myself and maybe learning a little bit about you as well.
Oh, you probably will. So I read on your, I think it was on your website, there's a quote that I just loved it. It said, "There is no greater healing power for me than sharing myself completely with others through words and song. It is my goal to create a connection for others and be a light for the path of others to climb out of their dark place. Music is a universal language that I believe has the power to create change." When did you write that?
I wrote it when I created the website, when I was trying to think of what it is that I believe that I do that could convey that message to others if they stopped in and saw my webpage. What is it that I could help them to understand that this is not the typical rap music, this is not typical hip-hop, that this is something that's been created from my own life journey that I want to help others get out of their dark place as someone helped me get out of mine.
Right. Well, and you know, that's a big part of the story that I want to hear today is, what was that dark place and how did you get out of it? Because having been there myself and walked up out of it and walked thousands of people up out of it, I know it's possible, and I'm always telling people, hey, you can walk up out of anything.
Right.
But the way we do that, I think, is different. And every time we tell our story, it gives somebody else a clue or a hint, or it gives me chills to talk about it. How'd you do it? What was your story? Tell us a little bit about where you've come from and how you got here.
Okay. Wow, it's hard. There's so many layers to it. But, you know, if I was to go back, you know, to my childhood, I had a horribly abusive childhood, sexually and mentally and emotionally abusive. Was molested at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a stepfather who was very religious. So at the same time, I had this God thing coming down on me, but I was also being severely abused by the same person. So it confused my mind at a very early age about God, and I went into a very dark place about myself, and the darkness took me to drugs and alcohol and addiction because I couldn't live within my own skin.
Yep, I understand.
So those are the things that, that's sort of a basic run through of it, but there's a lot deeper layers to that.
Right.
So that's the basic beginning of the darkness, started. We all start out thinking that we're awesome. When we're little kids, we don't think anything different. But then all these things happen that we take on as beliefs about ourselves that start to, take us into the darkness or take us, if we're taught things that aren't true to our
right.
spirit. And that's what happened with me.
Right. Well, we're taught that we're bad and don't matter and horrible, horrible things for children to learn.
Right.
So how long did that go on for you, that whole journey into the dark side?
Well, it probably began around the age of 5, even before that abuse began. I was a little girl who's a tomboy who was very aware of my own androgyny at a very young age. But androgyny was not something that's accepted within most families with
right.
a girl. You need to fit into a category. And so in that effort to try to fit into that category, that started my journey into the darkness of not being true to myself. And
uh-huh.
that's what it's always about. It's always about the less I can be true to myself, the darker I feel.
Yeah.
And that's where it began. And then the abuse began when I was 11, and it went on for 7 years.
Mm.
So there was a layering of the darkness, and then my own hand in taking myself further into it. So there's lots there.
With the drugs and alcohol.
Yes.
And I'm assuming at some point you got clean.
Absolutely. I've been sober. Actually, Friday I celebrate 23 years.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's been a nice journey. I was young and very fortunate, and I feel very blessed and very grateful for that.
Yeah.
So
what was it that began waking you up? What was it that gave you? Because I know your story could be my story. I mean, seriously, with the religion and the abuse, the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
the drugs, the alcohol. Well, not so much alcohol, but drugs. Something has to happen. Something has to intervene. Or we just die. We just stay on that path of pain. So what happened inside of you and outside of you that began that process for you of waking up?
There were several things, but the big moment of awakening actually happened for me 10 years ago. And, even though I was sober, there was still living in the victim, and that keeps me held in darkness. And when I started to move out of that was someone gave me the book, The Four Agreements.
Mm.
And I don't read. This is the phenomenal thing, but I started to read that book because I was in such a place of darkness. And that changed my life. For me, I read it, and I read it again, and I got out paper and pen, and I started to write down everything I believed about myself. And then another column of, was it true to who I really am? And I found out 99% of what I was believing was not the truth. It didn't connect with the truth of who I am. And so I began the journey of letting go of those beliefs to connect it to who I am, and that's where I am now. I'm still in that journey.
Right, right. And can you say a little bit about that book, The Four Agreements?
Yeah. I mean, for me, the Four Agreements are, pretty basic. But what it said to me was, think back as far as you can to your earliest memory and see what that is. And, is it something that was really true to you? And they gave an example of a mom has a really bad day at work. And she's driving in her car, and she just wants to get home, and she picks up her 5-year-old daughter, and her daughter's having a great day. And she gets in the back seat, and the daughter's just singing her heart out, and the mom says, "Will you shut up? You cannot sing." And so from that point on, the little girl says, "I can't sing."
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that made a big connection, because these are the things that happened to all of us, that had happened to me, that I carried as beliefs, whether they were small like that or great big. And I started to inventory that whole thing. But it basically says, be impeccable with your word, which means I need to be truthful, not just with you, but with myself.
Yeah, especially.
Yeah. And so, the Four Agreements are just, basically life-changing for me. And
right.
I've read that book many times, and like I said, I don't read. So that in itself is a miracle.
Is it Don Miguel or Ron Miguel?
Don Miguel.
Don Miguel.
Yeah.
always get that first name.
Right.
Yeah, it is an amazing book.
Mm-hmm.
And so was that, you did all that on your own?
No, I had help. I had other people that were conscious and awake, you know, that were there with me. So the person that gave me the book, obviously, a little more conscious and awake than me, and they, for whatever reason, they hand me this book and say, you know, maybe you should read this. I had people that stopped allowing me to be a victim, you know, which was huge because I had surrounded myself with people that felt sorry for me, and I needed the people that stopped feeling sorry for me and loved me enough
right.
to make me get out of that.
Right.
So those are the people. And I came upon Unity, which was a New Age type of thinking, so that
right.
changed my thought about God. So I had struggled with God. So suddenly it was, you know, God is love. That's it. And I was like, really? Because that's not what I had learned. And
right.
so there was a huge phenomena that happened with that as far as healing and forgiveness from within.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were clean for about 10 years
mm-hmm.
before that started happening.
Right.
Was there something that, I mean, did you do the quintessential hitting bottom and start to get clean? Or was it not so hard and you were able to begin seeing what was going on with that and letting it go?
Oh, I had a huge bottom. You know, I mean, there,
most of us
yeah,
do.
There was no seeing the light. It was, you know, I was basically pushed and pushed. And then I came in through the psych ward. I was deemed mentally incompetent through the state, had been sent to a state mental institution, and again, believed I was crazy.
How old were you?
I was 20.
Whew.
Yeah. So, and that was when, you know, when they sent me away and they said I was crazy and I would never be able to live on my own or take care of myself, I started to believe that. And again, I had this person that came into my life and said, I think you have a problem with drinking and alcohol, and I think if you were to face that, and I didn't believe them, but I kept being pushed in that direction.
Uh-huh.
And I went in sort of not believing that I had the problem, and then finally realizing that was the truth after I got sober for probably about 6 or 8 months into it. I was like, wow, I think, you know, my head was clearing up. And
right. So you were actually committed involuntarily?
Yes. I went to court and, you know, had doctors say, this girl needs to be put away. She can't take care of herself.
Who started those proceedings?
The hospital. I loved the psych ward. I admit, you know, the main psych ward was a safe haven, a place that I had never experienced, which was people listened to me talk about this abuse that I had never been able to talk about.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, when you're able to finally start saying the things that you'd been silent about, there's something about that that's addicting. At least it was for me. And I didn't want to leave there. And so with the drugs and alcohol, I kept myself sort of locked in a cycle of martyrdom and victim. And so, of course, I had a hand in being put into the asylum. And so, you know, I always say that I take responsibility for the fact that, you know, I was doing things that made them think that
right.
I was insane.
Well, it also sounds like it was an incredible gift to yourself, even though you maybe didn't know that then, because it was a place where you could actually feel what you hadn't been safe enough to feel
right.
before.
Yeah.
And we got to feel it to heal it.
Right.
I mean, we've got to own it before we can let it go.
Yes.
And it sounds like that gave you the beginnings of how to do that, or at least a safe space to begin.
Right. It did. It gave me the safe space, but again, I became addicted to the attention I was getting, and I sort of stunted my own healing growth because then I just stayed stuck in the pain.
Uh-huh.
And I never allowed myself to really delve into healing beyond it. And that took till I was 10 years into sobriety and I started reading that book.
Right.
So.
But so I'm assuming when you went into the hospital, you weren't drinking because you can't do that there. So you would go in and out and drink in between, or you went in and then just got clean for 10 years?
No, I went in and I would drink in between, but the psychotropic drugs made up for anything that alcohol did. And,
oh, yeah.
And I learned how to work that system so that I could, because I had to stay out of my head. The more I felt it and the more I talked about it, the more intense it got. And so I'd do everything I could to stay out of that.
Uh-huh.
So there's layers to what I did to keep myself held down. And I see so many people that do that now. They're afraid of actually feeling the feelings when they've already had the experience.
Right.
And you think it's going to kill you if you feel it, and it doesn't, but you have to find that out on your own. And
yep.
I had to find it out. And now I'm here to tell other people it won't kill you.
It won't kill you. There is a way out. Amen.
Yes.
Hallelujah. I will tell you myself.
Right.
So how did you wind up being clean for 10 years or not drinking for 10 years? Even while you were, you know, playing those games with yourself. But I have to say, I think it was a gift that you were giving yourself, and it was just the only way you could do it.
Right.
I don't see any reason to judge that as something bad. It sounds like it was perfect.
All those parts of my life I see as gifts because they got me where I am right now, and
exactly.
If I hadn't have taken that step, I might have went in a different direction.
Right.
And so I did get sober through 12-step. So when I got out of the hospital, they sent me to 12-step, and I told you I went belligerent, and I went, you know, I was like, I don't need this. But it wasn't long before I realized I did. It's just that I never delved into the real inner healing. I did it just enough to keep myself from using, and I had gotten so far into sobriety that I was too afraid to go back to that. But I never got into the real deep, the stuff that was really going to help me shine and help me
right.
evolve and help me grow. And I was still a victim within being sober.
Right.
I moved in circles of being a victim and holding myself down and sort of in this thinking of I'm always going to be a liar, a cheat, and a thief.
Yep.
And I needed to stop believing that because all those kind of thoughts kept me locked in,
right.
never being anything more than that. And, you know, how do you feel like you're going to succeed if you think you're always going to be a liar, a cheat, and a thief?
Right.
So that's sort of, I did stay sober, maybe a little self-will, maybe a little, you know, whatever reason. Again, it was a gift. I saw many people go out and use and
yeah.
die, and, you know,
yeah.
and I was lucky. I'm very fortunate.
Well, it's called grace,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Right, yes.
And it's also called commitment. It's your own free will and your own commitment. And I know what you mean. I've watched a lot of people do program just enough to not use, but not enough to get to touch anything joyous.
Mm-hmm.
Just enough to take the edge off.
Right.
So I don't have to go get loaded
right.
in order to live. But I'm not going to feel good either.
Mm-hmm.
So you use the 12 steps, which I am grateful for every day of my life, even though I hated it, hated every minute of it. But I'm nonetheless grateful for it. I'm wondering, in that initial process, when you went through the fourth step that first time, I think you said something that's really important, and a lot of people don't understand this. When you're an addict, what you have to do is get to the place where you recognize that you are a liar, a cheat, and a thief.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. You can never get clean without actually getting that.
Right.
And then, if you really work the steps, it takes you up and out of that. And I always watch and wonder where it was that we stopped actually doing the steps so that we didn't keep doing that raising up process. Because if you go all the way through the 12 steps, you're there.
Right.
So was it at the fourth step where you got stuck, or have you ever thought about that?
Well, I'm sure that was because I remained a liar within sobriety. So I was not telling the truth. You know, I gave
yeah.
just enough to get me by. I wasn't ready to face all that, whatever reason I had. And then I built lies, and I created lies around that. I mean, I was giving leads, and I was on circuit speaking based on so many lies. And, you know, so then I'm going home and knowing that from within myself. So be impeccable with your word. You know,
yeah.
I was not doing that with myself, and that was really eating away at me. And
yeah.
so I hit that bottom within sobriety, which
wow.
was the four agreements. And,
yeah,
you know, there's a whole nother level beyond the, you know, the 12 steps are like this wonderful foundation of getting you out of the hole. And then there's more, even way up in the sky beyond that. And sometimes I felt like I was holding myself down underground, just barely seeing the light.
Right. So when you first decided that you wanted to do music, because earlier you said you started that in 2005, was there a particular song or feeling or something that had to come first, and that's how you got started? Or what made you choose that route?
It chose me.
Super.
It chose me, yeah. So I didn't have This is what I tell people about the miracle of just stepping into the truth of who you are. Sometimes people don't know what they're supposed to do. Some people do. They say, oh, I know I was going to be a singer or a musician from the time I was two. I didn't know that about myself. I loved music, so I was a DJ. Had a DJ business, and I thought, I'll play music and make people happy that way. And in 2004, I was DJing karaoke and did rap as a way to help people get comfortable and come up on the stage. So it was my way of opening the show because I didn't feel I had a singing voice, but I could rap. I was at New Thought Unity and went to their picnic, and they had karaoke there. And so I thought, I'm going to get up and do this rap song just for fun. And I did a rap song, and the music director from there said, I've been looking for a rapper to do this me at Unity. And from within that, I did this cover song, and then he said to me, now I need you to go write your own. And I said, I can't write music. I don't know how to write a song. I don't know. And he said, yes, you can. And so from that point, he saw in me something I didn't know was even there. And so sometimes we're not aware of the gift that we have, but someone else can be aware of it for us until we can step into it. And so here I am, you know, realizing this was the passion that I didn't even know was there.
And that is a great story.
Yeah.
Well, see, I think it's wonderful when we have those angels and those miracles and those, because, I mean, I wouldn't be here if there weren't a whole host of those back there.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like just like you were ready that he said that and you went, oh, no, 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 no. But then he said yes, and you said, okay.
Right.
What was the first song?
New Day of Light. And I actually talk about getting sober. It's sort of about being, you know, throwing down the blanket of shame and letting the bottle go. And so it was the very first song I wrote in 2005. And actually, I wrote it, I woke up in the middle of the night at about 3 a.m., and scribbled all the words down on a piece of paper, went back to sleep, and the song was pretty much done. I went and met with the guy that writes my music, and you know, we did it, you know, and that was it. And so it's you know, Hell holds a special place for me because of the way that happened, because completely it came to me divinely.
Don't you love that?
Yes.
So I think this would be a good place to play that song. I have a CD here, and it's called TRU, The Revolution's Underway, and that's what her backup singers are called, Kim Blue and True. And I just love that. The revolution's underway. A New Day of Light is the fourth cut on the CD. I think this is a good time to hear it. What do you think?
I think that would be awesome.
All right, here you go, folks. Enjoy. New Day of Light, and that was by Kim Ballew and True off of her CD called True, The Revolution's Underway. To me, it's like I think of it as hip-hop with consciousness. So we've been talking about how Kim actually managed to rise up out of a severely abusive childhood and, of course, began using drugs and drinking to try to deal with the pain of that, like so many of us do. And thankfully, she realized before she died that it didn't work. And she began waking up to that fact. And even though it looked like she wasn't doing herself any favors, clearly you did, because you got yourself into a place that it was safe to actually feel your feelings instead of just keep numbing them away. And then somehow through that, maybe you think of yourself as a dry drunk those first 10 years?
Yeah, I could align with that probably. There's probably some people that knew me then that would say that too.
And then, was it the request to start doing the music that happened? No, the book happened how long before that?
It was about 3 years.
Wow.
So there was a lot of uncovering and self-awareness that was going on, and I was very young in that, but there was a big shift. And actually, just to throw something in about that, is when you saw me perform at the Swan event, a friend of mine came to see me perform there who has known me for about 18 years in sobriety, and when he saw me, ran into me right before that performance, he said, just seeing me, I looked like a completely different person. That I scared him when he saw me before. And so this was the thing, is I presented myself in a way that scared people. Not that I was big or scared. I just looked like you didn't want to mess with me, because I had so much anger and so much going on that I just kept people away in that way. And so it's funny, because he's, you know, a biker guy, and he's like, you scared me, but now there's this light. And so I think that's what was happening. You know, when I started to uncover that, the light was being uncovered. And so then I walk into this space where someone sees that. I had covered it for so long, no one could see it.
Right.
So.
Well, and least of all you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's the power of really good books. And when they're the right timing for us. Because there's 1,000 books that you could have used.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of them. And that one, for whatever reason, was the perfect one for you. I know a lot of people who have read that book and went, yeah. They just kind of read it and said, oh, yeah. And they post things on Facebook about it. But they didn't work it.
Right.
And you worked it.
Yes.
It's like something in that really spoke to you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that was?
Well, like I had told the story about the little girl in the back seat of the car, I was really relating things in my own life, and there had to be a readiness. I know there had to be some readiness within me. I was tired. Yeah. I was so tired of myself. I was tired of the games I was playing. I was tired of trying to keep myself in victim. I was tired of trying to hold myself from healing. And really, all along throughout my life, I think the truest part of who I am always wanted to get out, always, you know, was working its way out. And so that was finally a part where I think its arm just busted through and was like, I'm ready. I need out, you know. And so that was a moment where I was just ready, and it happened.
That is something in you. See, what I know about healing for myself and for lots of people that I've worked with is that everything has to come together at the exact right time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we could always heal from just this moment to the next. Everything could just be perfect, just like that. But it isn't, for all these various reasons. And I believe, I know, that the universe is so profoundly magnificent and in such an incredible flow that if we even are willing to be in that flow, then we create the circumstances that are going to most uplift us. And it sounds like something had already happened in you to make you not only ready, but to create the action of someone handing you a book that can make a difference.
Right.
I just find that phenomenal, of how those things happen.
Yeah, me too. I'm it's a grace, again, what you had said. You know, something happened within my life, within, you know, and maybe it was for a split moment, you know, I said something like, I'm ready for a change, or I need a change, or whatever happened, and the whole universe conspired to bring that to me, and I wasn't even aware that I had started that ball rolling towards me.
And yet, when it came,
yes.
You picked it up and used it well.
Right.
Yeah, that is fantastic.
Yeah.
And so you worked those. For those of you who don't know, the book, The Four Agreements, is really a profound book. And you can just read it and get a lot out of it, sort of intellectually and cognitively, and you just sort of have a greater understanding of what it takes. But you can also use the book the way you did,
mm-hmm.
which is work it.
Right.
And you have to be willing to do that. You have to have courage to do that. And you have to be willing to face that, what you haven't faced. Mm-hmm. Because you can't make any of those agreements until you're at least telling yourself the truth.
Right.
And that's the hardest daggum thing.
Yes, it is.
That is the hardest thing.
Yes, it is.
Because it's a whole lot easier to pretend. Especially when you grew up feeling unsafe or unloved or damaged.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't safe. And you learned that.
Right.
And so what then you have to do as an adult is you have to create safety.
Right.
And that's what you actually did. First of all, when you put yourself in the hospital, mm-hmm. which was a great way to do that.
Yes.
That was always my biggest fear, actually. If they ever lock me up, they'll never let me out. I was determined I was never being locked up.
Right.
But for you, it was perfect because it gave you a space.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use those steps that he outlines to sort of take you beyond where the 12 steps
right.
could have taken you.
Yes.
And when you had worked those for a while and then you started doing the music, how long did it take you from when the guy at Unity said, okay, I want you to do this, and you said, I can't. Mm-hmm. But then you did.
Right.
What was that like? What happened then?
I didn't just step into it and was like, this is what I'm going to do. I was still sort of putting my toe in the water of it, you know, is the way I see it. But it awakened this passion in me. And it was funny because I had never been on stage. I had never performed. And I just did it naturally. And so there was this natural thing that happened. No one coached me how to do that. No one said, this is how you do the microphone or how you do. It just was all natural, and so I see that for myself as part of that gift that was awakened in me that I always had that I didn't know.
Wow.
And so I always recommend for people, you might not know, you might not always know what the dream is or what the gift is. Just keep saying yes. Keep stepping in to the greater part of yourself. Keep allowing yourself to heal. Keep getting in touch with who you are and showing up in the world as authentically as you can today. And it will be revealed. You don't always have to know. And that's sort of what happened for me. And so I kept stepping into it. But with a lot of insecurity, you know, it's taken actually several years into it for the insecurity to go away and to really believe that this is what I'm supposed to do. This is my calling.
Uh-huh.
This is the gift I'm bringing to the world.
Uh-huh. And so was that 2005 when the Unity guy asked you to...
2004 is when he asked me. 2005 is when I wrote my first song.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
And when you woke up and that song was there, what was it? What did that feel like for you?
There was a little unsure, you know, but then there was this other part of me that was like, wow, I just wrote that. You know, where did that come from? You know, and, you know, it was about me, but... Like I said, in the middle of the night, I'm scribbling words on a piece of paper, and it was laying next to my bed when I get up. You know, I was just, you know, sort of threw me off for a minute, but then at the same time, I felt like there was something inside of me again that I wasn't aware of that was trying to get out. It was seeking its way out, which was the authentic me, which was the uh-huh. divine light that I am, that I had always been, that I had covered up through whatever means, and this was one more layer of it saying, I'm coming out, and
right.
you know, you're just going to have to get out of the way, because here I come.
Well, I'm telling you, that light's pretty bright.
Yeah, thank you, thank you.
You!
Yeah.
And so, Did you have a melody for it right then, or did that take a while?
I didn't. I had a melody for that chorus, and so that chorus that's being sung, I heard that, but I didn't hear how the verses were going to go. But whenever I write any songs, the melody comes to me. That's how when I write it, it's a melody, and I go to the. I don't know how to play an instrument or do any of that. I go to the guy that writes most of my music for me, and I hum it or I sing it the way I hear it in my head, and he is so talented that he can create something with me around that and is able to put that to a note into a, you know, so it's a beautiful, you know, marriage that we have as far as, you know, him being able to hear me hum and say, oh, yeah, I get that.
And how do you know this guy?
Well, this is David Kaiser. So he was the music director at Unity, the guy that saw that. And so, you know, we just have this, you know, wonderful relationship where it's a musical, I don't know how to describe it. We're musical soulmates in that sense, you know, that he can, you know, he can understand the language of Kim when I come to him and say, this is what I hear, you know, and we work it out together.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So you hear the words and the melody both together, which it's not that common. A lot of people will get one or the other, but not both together.
Oh, wow.
So you get that together.
Mm-hmm.
And then because it's not been your calling to learn music and play an instrument.
Right.
You actually have a person in your life who says, oh, yeah, come here. I'll put that to music for you.
Right.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a wonderful gift.
Yeah. Well, when I saw you perform at Swan Day, first of all, you were a complete natural on the stage. You looked like you had been doing it your whole life.
Right.
I'm thinking, how does somebody be that comfortable doing that? I can teach, I can train, I can get up in front of 500 people and speak it. That doesn't bother me. But I could no more get up and sing something. That would just make me die.
Right.
But you just looked like such a natural.
Yeah.
And you were so in yourself. You were so present in yourself. And at the same time, very connected with everybody that was singing.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved the connection that was happening in you, but also with everybody that was on stage with you.
Right.
How has that, because first it was just you who didn't know that you even had this, and then it came in a dream and through the night, and then you did it, and then this guy, and it's like it's continued to evolve, and now you have a backup group of singers that are phenomenal in and of themselves.
Right.
So I would love for you to talk about not so much how that happened in the ordinary frame of things, but what is it that has shifted in you that has let you bring in that kind of support?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really the question. So
right.
Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
For all of you who are just joining us, I want to let you know that it is 2 p.m., and you are listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM on your dial, and also live streaming online at WAIF883.org. The show you're listening to is Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within, and I am your host, Reverend Louisa Dyer, an interfaith minister and a spiritual life coach. And today we're having a special show from 1 to 3 p.m. because we're talking with Kim Ballou about her spiritual healing journey and this incredible music that she makes. And I want to let you know that there is a Facebook page for this radio show, and I would love to have you interact on that Facebook page and tell me a little bit about your story, because I think when we share our stories with one another, we get inspired and we wake up in ways that we don't do if we just read an article or hear about something. But when we actually listen to someone, I think it touches us inside, because we really are all part of the same thing going on in the universe. So I just want to make sure you know that there is a way to get in touch, and that is it through the Facebook page for the show by the same name, Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. I also want to let you know that if you want a little help with tapping into that inner divinity of your own, there is a free guided meditation on my website that you are invited to download if you would like to do that. And it's just my name, LouisaDyer.com or .net. And you can use that meditation to help you get present in your own body, get grounded in your own being, and then begin to open your awareness into your heart, which is where that divine spark lives. And, you know, a lot of times people ask me, how do you know I've got that divine spark in me? I've done this, I've done that. I'm worthless. I have no divine spark. And, you know, what I always tell them is, sweetheart, if you are breathing, that divine spark is alive and well inside of you. And how do I know that? Because I've worked with a lot of people whose spirit was leaving their body behind. And when that spirit is gone, the body is what we call dead. So if your body is not what we call dead, then that divine spark of life is in you. And you can call on it and raise yourself up. And that's what we're talking about with Kim today, about how she did that and what happened and where is she now. Because I think those are the really inspiring stories. And before we get back into that, I also want to let you know about underwriting on WAIF. If you have a business that you would like to get your business information to our listeners, then we offer incredibly affordable rates to underwrite any show that you would like to on WAIF. You can call one of our underwriting experts today, and they can walk you through that process. That number is 513-351-1538. Or you can also get in touch with me directly, and I will help you through that process. The cost of underwriting is very affordable, and it is a way to get your business information to our listeners. So I hope you keep that in mind as well. And I think what we're going to do now is play this song that keeps running through my mind off of Kim Ballew's CD. It's called True. The Revolution's Underway is the name of the CD. The song is called Rise. And when we come back, I will have Kim talk to you about that song. It is the second cut on this CD, and it goes through my head. I've listened to it online. I think she did it the day I saw her at the Swan event. And the song just resonates. So I hope you enjoy it. We'll be back in a moment.